This is the story of the Earthworm Jim video game. In outer space, a sweet evil cyborg lost the Queen's cyberspace suit. Well, it smooshes.
Wait a minute, slimy Earthworm Jim! And blammo! He becomes a superpowered hero. He takes out that precious dog. Then that stupid worm goes onto the planet Pep.
He even tries mucus spongy jumping.
And if that doesn't stop him, maybe the battle with Queen festering sweaty slug for a butt will. Earthworm Jim from Playmates.
This week in Your Parents' Basement, we're playing as the world's most heroic invertebrate. From 1994, we're running and gunning as Earthworm Jim, which was developed by Shiny for the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is a regular co-host that loves to blast away with his gun. It's Todd Brisket.
Cheesy effects. It's like the Tex-Mex that time forgot.
And our other co-host, he's a guy who loves to whip his worm around. It's Huell Hauser.
The Junkyard's owner, Chuck, and his dog, Fifi, want to welcome you to the Junkyard in their own special way, by trying to kill you.
Today, we're joined by a special guest. He's a buddy of mine from high school and college, and he mentioned that this was one of his faves way back when. He's in the top two of GoldenEye players that I know all time as well. It's my buddy, Pat.
Whoa, Nelly! Thanks for having me, boys.
Groovy. You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes to give us some stars. Also, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link at www.ypbpodcast.com. We need to recover from the most bogus journey we took last week with Bill and Ted. This week's game is Earthworm Jim. When it came to 1990s game series, you had your classics like Mario and Sonic. But after that, there was a whole bunch of wannabe mascot series, like Vector Man, Bubsy, Gex, and hey. Alex Kidd. Oh.
It's a low blow.
Oh, which one?
Vector Man.
Oh, well, you know, he's just balls, so.
Indeed.
one of the most successful of these series was Earthworm Jim, which was by Shiny and came out on multiple platforms in 1994. In Earthworm Jim, you're mostly running, jumping, and gunning your way through traditional platform gaming stages. However, the enemies and bosses you are fighting are truly bizarre. There's Cycrow, Queen Slug Furbutt, Evil the Cat, Bob the Killer Goldfish, and many others. You have some unique stages like Andy Asteroids and Poor Pete's Sake, where you have to guide around Peter Puppy. When I asked for some show recommendations the other week, Pat was quick to suggest that we cover Earthworm Jim. And this is a fairly famous game series, but this was actually my first time ever playing this one. Yeah.
Whoa.
But Pat, why don't you start the chat about the game off for us here?
Well, I think why it stuck out in my memory was because it's just so wonderfully weird. Mm-hmm. All of the levels seem, you know, a little different. The music changes, the bad guys change, not just the bosses, but even the little guys from, you know, here and there as you go through the levels. And that's something that was enough to stand out to me, you know, 22 years later. And looking back at it this week, I realized really how much it must have appealed to a fifth or sixth grade me.
Oh, yeah, this is right in that wheelhouse.
So much great fifth and sixth grade humor in this game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Right up Teeb's alley.
Oh, yeah.
Well, between, you're playing as a giant earthworm with muscles and a gun. That's fun.
Absolutely. I mean, it even though, you know, seems a little gross at times looking back on it, you know, you got fart noises going off in the background, you're fighting mucus monsters, and it's just right up a middle schooler's alley.
Yeah, I had three words written down for this game, and it's the name of a cartoon TV series from the 90s. Can one of you guys guess it?
Ren and Stimpy?
Yes, that is it. Like, when I was playing this game for the first time this week, I thought, wow, this is kind of like Ren and Stimpy. It's a little tamer than that, since Ren and Stimpy was a little grosser at times. But
yeah, oh yeah, even the art style kind of looks similar,
a little bit, like the hyper realistic backgrounds and stuff, or I should say detailed, not realistic.
Yeah.
No, yeah. They are. They're pieces of art when you look at them.
Mm-hmm. Now, and like you said, the design. Who, I mean, it really comes right from the top, like just each level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they pop. Definitely.
Yeah,
it's not just something behind you. It's not just colors.
Right, and also the character animations are nice and fluid too.
Absolutely.
This is a crisp, well done platformer.
Yes. Crisp.
Now, Steve, I didn't know if you had said two words instead of three, you could have been referring to the Earthworm Jim cartoon from the 90s.
Oh.
That followed the series.
I never
yeah, yeah, it, I, it debuted between number one and number two.
Oh, I never actually saw the TV series. Was that any
It's good? Surprisingly good for a licensed video game TV show. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Quite the scale right there.
And not just that, but I understand that the man who voiced it, I'm not going to butcher his name here, but Dan Castellaneta.
Yeah, he played Homer.
The same
Samson.
Man. There we go.
I think he. He played. He played Grandpa.
The same.
Oh part. Yeah,
I think he does Grandpa them both.
What?
Yeah, no, blowing minds here.
Oh my God,
Homer Samson.
That's incest.
I don't know.
That's a lot of work.
I'm not familiar with this character. Is he
doing two voices?
No, I've never seen the cartoon. I didn't want to ruin the game, so.
Homer Samson.
Yeah, no. You got to save yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would ruin the sequel.
Definitely play through first, go back, and what you don't want to know how it's going to end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Although, by the way, there's no way I would have been able to get to the end of this game.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Like,
yeah, do you remember how far you got as a kid, Patrick?
I think I was borrowing it from my friend Eric for like a week, so I never finished it, and went back, played it again this week, and I got all the way to Buttville.
What?
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Did not finish. Tough.
Yeah, I saw a video of Buttville, which is the last level for those listening, and it looked impossible.
There are just freaking spikes. Insane. Everywhere yeah. Spikes. Yep.
Yeah, so there's a lot of unique. There's a lot of unique controls because you are a worm in a spacesuit, but the spacesuit, like, you can take it over, and you're just like a guy with a worm head. And one of them is you can helicopter yourself as you jump so you sort of float to the bottom. But the last level is just like a maze of spikes. The one part I saw anyway, where you're just like hovering through, trying not to hit the wall, the edges of just all these spikes, and it looked crazy.
Oh, that is, I mean, basically the level. There are the spikes everywhere, and you hit one of them, you start bouncing off of them, and there goes all your life.
It looked like one of those levels.
You gotta wait for that.
Like one of those impossible Mario levels that people design, but this is like an actual game.
It, you know, I have to say, playing it this afternoon, it did feel pretty impossible.
Yeah. Well, I'm impressed you got that far, to be honest.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, yes. I mean, the running thing with this show is that we are horrible at video games now, which is ironic that we host a podcast on video games. I got into stage two, like, legitimately, and that was about it.
Two meaning the hell level?
Yeah. Like, okay. Well, I got past... rocket thing. Yeah, I got past the rocket, like the little mini thing you play between stages.
Right.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, that's another cool thing about this game is that there's a bunch of different play styles that happen during the game.
A little bit.
Like, there's a rocket mini stage where you're zooming through space, and then there's a level where you have to whip the puppy to prevent him from falling down holes.
Yeah, I have to say that was probably my least favorite part of the game, was chasing Pete around, having to whip him from side to side. And then, you know, every time you mess it up, he drops down a hole, turns into some sort of a Hulk-like rage monster, and helicopters you back a ways.
Yeah, I didn't get to any of those.
Yeah, but there's just a lot of different things going on. Like, every stage is different. There's one where you're bungee jumping, and you have to fight a bungee jumping snot man.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't get to that one. I probably couldn't have even tried that.
Yeah, that was not a very rewarding level. They just make you do it three times. You're dropping, and you have to beat him against the side of the cliff. Meanwhile, like you were saying, using his helicopter head to float down from things. In this case, he's using his whole body to bungee jump.
Oh.
God, I...
Yeah, and so, speaking of using his head, is that... you have two weapons in this game. One is a gun. You can use your little shooties. And the other is you use your own body or worm body as a whip.
Right.
That's very cool.
I found the whip. I could not kill like anything with it. Like, cause you have to get close to things to whip them. And by that point they just like, you know, attack you.
Well, not just that, but he uses the whip as a hook to swing from things to, from time to time as well, and when you get up close to one of those things, you can't connect to it. You have to be this exact distance apart in order to make the swing successfully, otherwise you're just going to fall.
Yeah.
When there was two in a row, that got really hard.
Absolutely.
I actually found the mechanics of this game, like the control, like really confusing. Like I kept trying, like at various points you kind of have to go across a kind of like a rope swingy, like using your head. And I kept trying to jump up because every other game you can kind of like jump up while you're in situations like that. And I just never got the hang of it.
I don't think you could do that.
No,
you. All you do is
this game is hyper realistic. Can you do that in real life? I didn't think so.
Well, the thing is, I kept trying, but if you press the jump button when you're hanging, like I don't know, they're almost like clotheslines or something like that. Like you just fall to the ground. You just fall onto the spikes, and I kept doing that repeatedly
because you can't jump up.
Exactly.
Because you just kept trying to do it.
You can't. It was instinct, because in all these other games, like Aladdin and like that kind of stuff, you can just jump up. Not in Earthworm Jim.
Well, they also tease you by putting items above the rope.
Yes, that too.
But you have to like swing to them or get them some other way.
Mm-hmm. But then I feel like in earlier levels, you're able to jump up onto something and then up through it and onto it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
whereas there are like cliff faces where I know what you're talking about. You're hanging and you want to jump around it. Mm-hmm. You can't go straight through it. You have to go up and to the side and back around and grab onto the edge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was just bad at this game in general, but I found the jumping mechanics were kind of weird.
A little bit, but I think overall it controlled pretty well, and I think just the whole level design really helped.
I also, I didn't play a lot of video games at the time, and I feel like this was one of the first ones where it wasn't so much the up, down, left, right stick control, but it was, you know, with the Genesis, I was able to say, oh, I can get in between up and right, you know, or I can crouch and go forward at the same time. So I feel like it was those sort of, you know, your north by northwest sort of controls that kind of opened up a different space in the game.
Mm-hmm. This was innovation for you.
For me, absolutely.
Ooh.
Not claiming they were the first ones to do it by any means, but it was interesting to play through.
Yeah. Now you can shoot in all 8 directions in this one. You know.
The Cardinal 8, of course.
Yeah, the classic 8, as we all know it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which helps because there's a lot of flying enemies.
Yes. Yeah,
which is awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this game has a lot of versions of the goddamn bats that you see in other games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Yule's favorite.
Yeah, it was a little more tolerable in this because you could just shoot them like more easily.
Well, in my brief playing, the thing I found most annoying was one, there's spikes everywhere. I was constantly running into spikes.
Very spike heavy.
And the other thing was there were like these, I think they were like dogs that basically just like charge you at all times, like the second you get on the onto the screen. So
in the junkyard?
Yeah, yeah, in the junkyard.
Yep.
Yeah, junkyard dogs, just like actually no, Always Sunny, they have the junkyard cat. Agent Jack Bauer.
Exactly.
It's
tough as nails.
Yeah, he likes gasoline. We found him in a pool of it. So I don't know, Todd, how far did you get in this one?
Oh, this week I only got like to the second stage, but you know, when I was a kid, I got pretty far. I never beat it. I might have put out the old Game Genie and beat it that way, but but yeah, this is a tough game, even for young me.
Yeah, seasoned video game expert.
To try it, to exactly. Keep trying when I died.
Yeah, I managed to beat the hell level thanks to many, many save states. But I do like the boss design, or at least like the boss battle design is fun for the two that I encountered.
Yeah. So did you got to the guy on the conveyor belt thing that was it was like a crane, and then you have to launch boxes at him.
Yeah.
And then once it hits him, he starts throwing up fish.
Yeah, that was so ridiculous. But yeah, just like figuring out how to beat the bosses was fun. And in the hell stage, there's like the evil the cat at the end. And you start out of your suit for some reason. I guess he knocks you out of it. They don't really show that. Because mm-hmm. You're just a worm bouncing around. And like he has this fire gun that he shoots at you and you avoid the fire. Then the fire like weakens the platform that your suit is on. It eventually crashes down and you can grab it. And then you have to fight the cat. And that was a tough battle. The actual fighting the cat.
I have a little admission to make here. When I replayed it this time around, it was on the Xbox. It was the HD revamp of the first game.
Interesting.
So I'm sure it looked a little smoother. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
I had the Genesis one borrowed back in probably 94, 95, but this was a little smoothed out, and I don't know if it's because of that, but you were just saying it's never really explained, you're just outside of the suit. I feel like the whole thing's not explained. You know, where did the suit, you know, it dropped from a rocket ship in the beginning, but,
yeah.
I mean, it says go save the princess. What princess?
Drop you into the game at the beginning without any explanation.
Well, my friends.
Yeah, you just gotta take it. Like, okay, well, no, there's a worm in a robot suit, and here we go.
This is where the time-honored tradition of reading the manual comes in.
Ah.
Because they sort of explain it in that.
Well, since someone apparently read the manual, are you gonna tell us?
Nah.
Oh,
well, the problem is the manual I found, quote unquote, acquired. Mm-hmm. It starts like the story starts, and it goes page 5 and page 6, but then pages 7 and 8 are missing, which is where they're explaining the story. So it goes from you're just a worm avoiding a crow eating you, and you jump down into a hole, but then. The next page, he's suddenly in the suit now, so I don't know where the suit came from. But once a worm enters this magical spacesuit, he becomes Earthworm Jim, and he finds the gun and starts shooting things.
That's a question I had about it. Is it only worms that can go into the spacesuit?
No, so I do know a little bit about the story.
Oh.
The spacesuit, so Psycro was trying to deliver the spacesuit to Queen Slug for a butt, so she could wear it. She used to, the story is she used to fit into it, but not sure if she still can. She wants to try it again, something like that. But it falls out of his spaceship and lands on Jim, and Jim gets it. And so that's why Psycro is after Jim, is to get the suit back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair
things
enough.
Are falling into place.
And Jim just is using it to rescue Princess What's-Her-Face, and I don't know why he's trying to rescue her. She's some kind of bee person, right? She looks like a bee?
She's like a black and yellow stripe there.
This is one horny worm.
Now, speaking of Psycho, did anybody else find him to be vaguely racist? that was just me. He brought back a little bit of the Disney crows there from Dumbo. And I don't know if that's something that was just a little, you know, in the back of their minds when they were creating them, didn't really think about it, but that's how the art came out, or whether it's just, you know, I was reading way too into it, but
it might have just been the association with the Dumbo crows, and maybe that's just what you were seeing, but I definitely didn't get that.
No,
fair enough. You've got this pink fleshed heroic character running through the things, and this dark skinned crow chasing them. It's a little uncomfortable.
This light skinned gentleman,
pristine hero.
Right. I mean, he's got a few wrinkles, but it's to be expected with a worm of his age.
Well, Psycho is the classic bait and switch enemy. Like, he's not, like, the end boss, but he's the guy that you deal with most of the game.
Yeah.
Right. So, and he's always... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I found this line here that explains why Jim is going for the princess. It says, upon discovering his newfound powers granted by the suit, he overhears Psycho talking to Queen Slug for a butt and becomes interested in meeting the queen's twin sister, Princess What's-Her-Name.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, the manual explains that she got the good end of the genetic pool.
Mm-hmm. No.
A truly bodacious babe of the highest magnitude.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like 1994 pictures, right? Speaking right there.
Yeah.
some Bill and Ted leaking into this one.
Yeah. And the queen has one of the best evil boss names of all time, because the Queen Slug for Butt is the short name. Her full name is the Evil Queen, Pulsating, Bloated, Festering, Sweaty, Pus-Filled, Malformed Slug for a Butt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm reading that as well now. I like it.
It's like she has a yo-yo. What is that? Weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, her name is literally that because she literally does have a slug for her butt.
Yeah, she's like one of those like ant queens that you'll see in the middle of the ant colony.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The names are very on point in this game, such as Professor Monkey for a Head.
Yep.
Major Mucus. Let's see. Evil the Cat, of course.
Earthworm Jim is an earthworm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Exactly.
Can we talk about the ending and why it's one of the greatest in the 16-bit era?
Oh, go right ahead.
I was wondering about that. I did want to bring that up, but you can go ahead.
Okay, so spoiler alert for those who haven't played this 20-year-old game. at the end of the game, when you find Princess What's-Her-Name, you go out to meet her, and then before you can talk to her, a cow falls on top of her and kills her, apparently.
Yes. And her crown falls off that you grab later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you get to the end, and...
Yeah, not only that, but when she gets crushed by a cow, and then Jim walks off screen kind of sheepishly trying to get away...
It's like the Charlie Brown...
The ledge that they're on collapses, and they fall into lava.
Yeah. In case you're wondering if she's dead.
She's really dead. And then Jim comes back on screen and sees the crown sitting there on the ground, and he just picks up the crown and leaves.
Now, I read that, from what I understand, the cow was supposed to be the same cow that you launched way back in the beginning of the game. So it was a Seinfeld episode coming full circle there.
That's why it's so why it's such a great ending, is because this nothing piece of the first level where you just drop a fridge onto a platform and launch a cow, and it says cow launched in the first stage, that really does nothing there. And doesn't come back until the very end of the game when it falls on the princess.
Long way for a little payoff, I would say.
Can you get past the first level without launching the cow? I don't remember.
I think you need to launch him in order to move on in the stage.
Yeah, that's wondering if there's like two endings. That would have been great.
Oh, but there are two endings.
Oh.
If you play it on easy mode, this is if you get that is the norm. That's the good normal ending. On the easy mode ending, the princess is not there. Jim goes and there's nobody there at the edge, and he just goes home. And then it runs like a encyclopedia entry of what a worm is. It's like a worm is a earth dwelling invertebrate, and it just gives you like an encyclopedia definition of a worm, and it's game over.
What? That's what you get.
Ooh. Well, I don't have to worry about ever seeing either of those screens, but now I'm kind of curious what the plot of Earthworm Jim 2 was.
Killing that cow.
I never played that.
Although he does fall into the lava, so that was already done.
Maybe they just have a barbecue.
Well, I mean, she comes back again, though, so maybe there's hope for the cow.
Oh.
We can all hope.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we touched on is the music. This had some pretty great music all throughout it. And again, just like the scenes, the levels, it changed dramatically from one thing to the next. There was the jangly banjo when you're chasing Psycro down the asteroid tube, and it goes to more of a laid back kind of doom 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 ding through some of the levels, and just really, really cool music for the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Great level music.
Mm-hmm.
The end level, I think, is what was on the Snifferoo.
Oh, I can't remember. I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the intro music is going to be a commercial, which people have already heard by this point. But the commercials for this game were also pretty weird. Like it was basically like the old Wendy's lady, and she turns into a worm.
Who's the old Wendy's lady?
Like the
I'm not familiar.
The lady who goes like, "What's the beef?
Where's the beef?
Where's the beef? What's the beef?
What's the beef?
What's the deal with beef?" Actually, it might not be her. It's just all old people look the same to me. So.
Oh yeah, especially in the early 90s.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was like one of those weird, bizarre commercials. Yeah, she turned into a worm, I believe. So good for her.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm. And also, I'm looking at the plot info for Earthworm Jim 2, and in that one, you just save Princess What's Her Name.
It doesn't explain how she came back, or
apparently not.
From what I understand, reading down the line, eventually it's revealed that they're all actually cows.
Yes.
So.
The game ends with Jim saving the princess, but all three characters eventually turn randomly into cows.
Including Jim?
Including Jim.
This is cow Jim?
Well, you know.
It's zany, guys.
Yeah.
It sure is. I have no idea where they pulled this out. I mean, there are times where it seems absolutely fitting for 1994, like you guys said before. You know, you can see Ren and Stimpy in it, in the animation, and in some of the types of jokes and stuff they're going for. But other times, I just feel like these are absolutely like 60s acid influenced artists that have been working on this, and like, well, what if, man? What if he's in a submarine and he's got to get to this other part? But he has no air, you know? It's just completely zany, like, no idea where they pulled it out of.
Yeah, man, let's just turn them all into cows. People love cows. This is so heavy.
From what I understand, too, is all of this was brought up to be something to compete with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. To try to edge in a little bit on their market share, and rather than going through like, all right, we're going to do a TV series, or we're going to start with a comic book, or what else, and move up into video games, they said, we'll do the game first, It's going to be so popular. Everybody wants to see this earthworm with a robot suit and a ray gun. And then we'll branch out from there. And it actually worked out for him. He was, I think, 16th, they said, of the best characters of 1994, something along those lines. One of the best characters of 1994.
Who said this?
Earthworm Jim.
Oh, well, that's a
good point. I need to back this up. I'll get this information for you. Hold on.
The Patrick Hot 20. It might have been a list of Hot 100 of 1994.
Yeah, I went back and interviewed myself in 1994, and I was very impressed, let me tell you.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have a time machine, it feels like it's good that you would use it for that purpose and not...
I don't know what else I would use it for.
Not to kill Hitler.
Finishing your high school history report, as we learned last week. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess to compete with the Ninja Turtles, they needed just another animal that acted human. They thought like that was the key.
Yep, just anthropomorphize something, and there you go.
Yeah.
Hey, something that doesn't have arms or legs.
Hey, he's a cool dude, man.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He says things are groovy. Mm-hmm. That's still cool, right?
Well, that's another thing that just made me think, like, these guys have to be from the 60s, the ones who made this up.
You're like the head designer.
Are they big Evil Dead fans?
True.
Well, kind of to touch on the history of the series here, Earthworm Jim was pretty well received. I couldn't find sales data, but I think it was a pretty good hit. Because they did rush a sequel into production. The sequel came out in 1995. It was similar kind of art style, similar type of game. Unfortunately, the series hit some rough times after, primarily because Shiny was bought by Interplay. The developer was then moved to a new IP, Wild 9, which received okay reviews when released in 1998 for the PlayStation. The Earthworm Jim series was continued by VIS Entertainment, who released a game for the N64. It was delayed several times, and despite this, it seemed like a pale imitation of the original and other Nintendo 64 platform games already out. Like, most of the reviews I could find said it wasn't as good as Mario 64 or Banjo-Kazooie.
I watched some videos, and it looks absolutely horrendous. It does not hold up. Really? It does not look fun. It looks like just one of the entry-level... 3D games, like, we got to crank this out in 3D. Okay, we have 1 month to learn how to program a 3D game. Let's do it.
I think I vaguely remember that existing.
Yeah, there not
really.
There was, like, this weird, awkward era where Mario 64 was really good, and then everything else just was, like, shovelware crap. Like, it was clearly, like, hastily made into 3D and shoved out. Unless it was, like, a game by Nintendo or some of the new game series were okay, like Spyro and Crash Bandicoot and some other stuff, but not so much like Castlevania, I think, has a notoriously bad 3D game, too.
It's awful.
VIS got their hands on several interesting licenses, like Earthworm Jim, the Powerpuff Girls, and Evil Dead, and they mostly made bad games for all of those series. So VIS lasted 4 or 5 years, and then they seemingly folded. They went out of business.
I'm going to blame their horrible name.
Yeah.
Vis Entertainment. I don't know.
If they went by Vis Entertainment, that'd be much better than VIS.
Yeah, I mean, you know, neither one is all that great. There is a forgettable Game Boy Earthworm Jim released in 1999, and an HD version of the original came out for the PlayStation Network in 2010. I think, Patrick, that's the edition you were playing, although you say you had it for the Xbox?
I do, yeah. It was Xbox One, but it's one of those, you know, going back arcade versions that they have to draw up, like, the Xbox 360 platform to to run it.
Okay. However, new game development for Earthworm Jim has kind of been dormant since the 2000s. A PlayStation Portable game was near 60 to 80% complete, before being canceled in 2008, and Earthworm Jim 4 has been rumored since 2010, but in 2015, a developer said it has been in limbo for a long time because of financial difficulties at Interplay. Interplay has mostly been out of game development since 2004, mostly releasing remakes, WiiWare, and smaller PC games since then. Interplay has done the best to sell off all of its good content. Like, it sold Baldur's Gate, it sold off Fallout, which is a little game we've played a little bit.
Little indie darling.
Yeah. Yep, indie darling, Fallout 3, Fallout 4. It's basically left with just re-releasing old stuff at this point. So, Earthworm Jim.
Well, if it's just money trouble that's keeping them from bringing it back, I feel like they should just get a former Red Sox player involved and have Rhode Island fund it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see how that could go wrong. Maybe.
No.
Maybe he could even become governor of Massachusetts. That would help him in his in his efforts.
It's good for marketing.
Oh God. Anyways, that's Earthworm Jim. Did you have any final thoughts there on this game?
Yeah, I like the cameos by Backsack in the Heck level. Thought that was good.
How so? Was
there was lawyer enemies with their briefcase.
Okay, I got you.
It's a biting social commentary on the practices of lawyers and where that might lead them in other lives.
Just accountants and lawyers.
Just another way of fighting the man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They worked him in there.
Just like people from the 60s.
Brisket, any final thoughts from you here?
No, great game.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you. Pat, how about you? Final thoughts on this one?
I just found it was Electronic Gaming Monthly that named him the best new character of 94.
There it is.
Oh, that's a reputable gaming source.
And I also wanted to say research. I really appreciate when you respawn that you popped out of a can of worms.
Oh, nice.
That was really, you know.
True.
They weren't afraid to go for it. If they wanted to make the pun, they were going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just had to check whether EGM was still around, and apparently they stopped printing in January 2009.
Are they just an e-zine now, Steve, or are they completely gone?
It seems like it, yeah, that they still have a website. I don't know. Let me check.
Okay.
EGM.com, I'm assuming.
Figured they'd be absorbed by Game Informer or something.
Actually, you know what? I'm looking here. EGM.com does not go to a website for me. Oh, it's confusingly, someone must be squatting on the domain because the website is www.egmnow.com.
Oh. So, I want it now.
I can't wait for it.
Yeah. Not going to wait a month like a loser. I don't know. I kind of miss. I miss having that magazine. All I get now is Game Informer. And that's because it comes free. I don't know how to stop it.
Never ends.
Yeah.
That happened to me once. They started sending me Rolling Stone.
Oh. At least.
Yep. Ask for it.
At least that has, like, articles in it. I don't know. Game Informer has, like I read the reviews, and I read the back of the magazine will have, like, a retrospective. And then the rest of it's just like previews of games. And it's like, this is why the internet exists. So that you can read about games coming out and watch videos. But
you know what they used to do with those magazines that I appreciated, though, is when it was the era of consoles that ran on CDs, you get like a PlayStation CD that had demos of a bunch of games on them. You could play through a little bit.
Yeah. Here's 5 minutes of Tobal number one. For you to play through Bushido Blade.
So good.
Let's move right along to the email portion of the show. Todd, did you receive any emails this week?
I forgot to check my emails this week. I'll check again next week.
Well, it is pretty exhausting, so can't blame you there. Huel, did you receive any emails?
I did, in fact. And it is from one email, of course, from Scooterbutt42.
Would you like to read that email on the air? right
now? I will.
Okay.
Controversial, but I will read the email that I received.
Okay.
Scooty writes, YPB boys, the Kickstarter is over, and I'm sorry to say it didn't go well. By the end of it, I wasn't close enough to being funded. There must be other ways of getting money. I've always heard about people doing things for others, and they would give them money for it, but I never seemed to be able to figure out how. I wish I could have been something easy, like a lawyer's secretary or an actor. I've had to act my way out of tons of sticky situations. I'd be great at it. Which reminds me, do you think any video games would make a good TV show? Sincerely, Scooterbutt42.
Wow. That's a good ask.
Yeah. I mean, we've had the movie discussion before, but you need longevity and serialization to be a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, of course, as we all know, in the golden age of television, as we're reminded every time we open up a website.
Yes. I heard.
Of any kind. So feel like anything could be made.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like it's an easy answer, but Mass Effect would make a great TV show.
I feel like it'd be a nice
anthology series.
A little too Star Trek-y.
Yeah, then my follow-up thought was, I think they've already made it, and it's called Star Trek.
A little bit. Be a more exciting Star Trek for sure, but...
Yeah, well, and also, like, I don't know, Mass Effect borrows liberally from pretty much every sci-fi series ever.
So, yeah.
True. I don't know. I feel like one of the weird offbeat games we played would be good. Earthworm Jim. Like, Earthworm Jim...
Well, that already was, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was
a cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah. You could also do, like, The Tick. like
that
a
was
tick,
also a show.
Well, a Tick version of Earthworm Jim.
I'm confused.
Like a live-action version of Earthworm Jim.
Oh,
they did,
I see
they
what
did that
you get
too.
At.
No, they did. They didn't do a live-action version of Earthworm Jim.
It starred Patrick Warburton.
No,
Deadly Serious.
That was The Tick.
There was a cartoon and a live-action one.
I don't believe you.
Look it up!
I'm trying to look it up right now.
Todd, any thoughts while he looks that up?
Yeah.
How about, the greatest game of all time, Crusader Kings 2. That'd be a great, great TV show. Nice little epic saga. Of the
It'd be
Middle
like,
Ages.
Game of Thrones set in like a real
yeah,
Earth
Game
planet.
Of Thrones. So much incest and murder. Mm,
my favorite things.
So much eugenics.
Exactly.
No, and I cannot find anything about a live action Earthworm Jim.
Get at it. No, it existed.
Patrick Warburton.
No, you guys are both smoking so much crack because you can't talk to each other. All right. He said there's a live-action Tick TV show, not Earthworm Jim show. Right?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said the Tick.
Yeah, the Tick has a live-action show.
I said that!
With Patrick
That's
Warburton.
What I was saying.
Yeah. I knew that. That's what I'm saying. They need to do an Earthworm Jim version of that.
Oh. All right. I'll check the tape later.
No.
Someone crossed the streams on that one.
yeah. Anyways.
Patrick, did you have any ideas?
Not off the top of my head what would be great as a TV series, but I did see a Pac-Man series that they made recently out of single-celled organisms. They set up a Pac-Man maze. Yeah, check out the video online sometime. And they had these single-cell organisms chasing this one other one through the Pac-Man, the original level there. And
just like real, like under a microscope.
Yeah, I mean, it was for all the marbles there. You know, they caught them. They were going to eat them.
Mm-hmm. Watch
and they didn't have to pay any actors. So I think that's a win-win.
They just enslave some organisms.
Force them
made
to
them
battle.
Dance for yeah. our amusement.
Battle to the
exactly.
death. Oh,
what
so
could be
like
better?
So dog fighting's wrong, but we can make these single-celled organisms eat each other. Okay, I see how it is.
Watch single-celled organisms play the smallest game of Pac-Man ever. For science, of course.
I'm starting an organization for single-celled rights.
And also,
an outrage.
Even better, this news story I found is dated July 4th this year. So, what better way to celebrate America?
Am I blowing up a tiny part of it?
Oh, no, except it was done by Norwegians.
Oh, no wonder. They had no respect for July 4th. They didn't care.
Let's just release this when America's sleeping.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, they just didn't want PETA on their backs, that's all.
Oh, yeah.
They figured they'd all be out celebrating and
eating veggie burgers and salad on the 4th.
Boca burgers.
Ugh.
Actually, I don't mind a Boca burger.
Let's get out of here. End this call.
Well, it would have been weird, Pat, if you had received an email this week, but did you receive any emails about this show?
I did not receive any emails about this show or otherwise.
Hmm.
Oh. Nobody likes me that much.
Oh, that sounds sounds a little lonely. Sorry about that. What about any actual letters? Did you get any correspondence?
Oh,
facts. You know, I think I did, but as you know, I just moved and they haven't been forwarded here yet. So I'm sure I'll be expecting it sometime soon.
Yes, Ed McMahon will be on your doorstep any day with a nice big check.
Is he still alive?
No, that will make it even more surprising.
Hi-yo!
Well, I received one email this week. Dear YPB boys, why doesn't Todd ever host the show? Also, sources tell me that one of your guests tonight lived in Japan for a year. If so, did he ever go to Japanese arcades, and was it magical and life-changing? Sincerely, Chuck F. Cheese.
Wow.
I think
sources.
He may be referring to you, Pat, since you lived in Japan.
Oh, I wasn't sure if Todd was going to take the first part of that question about not hosting. Okay, yeah, I did get to go into one of those arcade parlors, and it was magical and life-changing because it makes zero sense whatsoever. You go in, and you play these games, and there's lights, and I mean, it's like being in the middle of a casino. But you can't win anything except these silver balls.
What?
Then, yeah, they give you and they're not even like marbles. They're like stainless steel bearings. And
are they like the tickets of Japan?
Yeah, because gambling is illegal, and that would be gambling. Oh. They make you take these balls into a separate establishment next door. Mm. Where you can redeem them for something else, like money or prizes.
That's so weird.
It was just a very, very weird experience to go in, you know.
Like, how big were they? Like, if you win a bunch of them, are they just cumbersome?
No, I mean, they're like the size of a screw head, maybe, but completely spherical. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're going to one of these places, you're bringing your fanny pack.
For some reason.
There's no reason not to.
I was envisioning like a baseball sized like metal ball that you would just get bestowed upon you. Like someone
you have
like,
to have somebody behind you holding all your balls for you.
Yeah, I mean that's good in any situation. So did people have like I'm now picturing this. Did people have like custom made like ball carrying sacks?
You know, I feel like if they did, they were the same kind of people who went in there in their like full on warm up track outfits.
Exactly, like that's the like I'm picturing that culture. And the DDR people.
Oh, I could totally see it happening, but I can't say I saw it personally. I just absolutely could envision it.
Hmm. So what you're trying to say is you weren't one of those people. Wink.
No, I was mostly one of the ball holders.
Yes, of course. Got to start somewhere.
Yeah,
get a work your way up in the world. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh boy.
Well, actually, Brisket, you recently went to Korea for a bit, didn't you?
Sure. Yeah, went for a month.
Going
this past
any,
summer?
Any arcades there? Or any... Or no time?
No arcades. No. We good, didn't go to any dedication. Arcades. Sorry.
Good show,
sorry
good show dedication. That. Okay.
Sorry. Sorry, kids. Daddy's going to spend it all on, on kimchi.
Daddy's got to get him some balls.
Yeah. Balls of a different kind. Well, anyways, I think we're almost all set. Unless Brisket, did you have anything else you wanted to share this week?
Yeah, we got another email into the for the segment that's sweeping the nation. It's time once again to ask the Sweet Boys. If you have any questions about life, sex, love, relationships, or any other subject that has been troubling you, then please write in to us at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com with subject ask, followed by your question. Remember, we will always keep your questions anonymous unless otherwise requested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have an email that came in to our box, and I think it is a kind of response to the first question, the first ask we got way back all those episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they write,
can you refresh us or are you just,
the first one, let me scroll down here to my emails.
It's like
the title of that first email was, do pale white people get really good kissing and sex?
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Of course. How could I, right?
So
forget?
this new ask, no, it is anonymous. I can't say whether it's the same submitter or not.
Okay.
And they write, dark black skin, should they feel comfortable hugging and kissing in public?
Oh, no.
Singles and dating. I see dark black women all the time, high heels, fishnets, short pants. They are in public, hugging and kissing. Some have nice hairstyles, too. Shiny black, red, multicolored, and moderate makeup and lip gloss. They want to drink in public. You can see them drinking anything but beers, less common. But then they are on dates, hugs and kissing in public with a black man. Everybody stares. If the black man decent, neat, look drug-free, everybody suspicious. It deters such. I last saw a dark black woman at Hooters. Her hair was dark red. She had white tennis shoes, very short orange pants, red makeup, and red-colored finger and toenails. She was red. Her butt was big, and she kind of tall, too. Like 160-something pounds. Her shorts so short, booty cheeks clearly visible.
What?
Right. Sorry for laughing at your serious question, writer. Right. Let me get back on track here. Right.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Her shorts.
Fuck.
Her shorts so short, booty cheeks clearly visible, and kind of could see inside. She was sipping on red wine. She was in her 30s. Then a black dude in dark suit came in, like 40s and regular. At the bar table, a firm hug, and 10-second kiss to lips. This girl was very dark black skin. She looked like she was Haitian. The kiss make a little noise. Some of makeup got on him. Then when he rubbed it off, she got a little mad. But the guy in dark suit, he was kind of happy. I seen him come in before in hugs too. Never any issues. But how many black men are coming in dark suits? He was kind of big though, closer to 185 pounds. He had medium haircut. But it just happened. I saw him staring her butt too when she was close by. He knew her a little. All right, that's the end of the ask.
What?
Oh my God.
Was there even a question?
I feel like there was either five questions or no question, and I can't decide which.
Yeah. The question's in the title. It says, dark black skin. Oh. Should they feel comfortable hugging and kissing in public?
Well, no, of course not. No.
Um,
No one should. It should be banned for all colors.
Oh, you're just saying no PDA at all.
No.
Yeah.
Keep it at home. Draw the curtains. Turn all the lights off. And then do what you wish.
Huh.
That should be the law.
I agree. No hugging and kissing in public for anybody. You know, I'm not racial, guys. Mm-hmm. Equal opportunity. I would say keep your hugging and kissing in public, but feel free to have big booty and where you can see.
See the inside.
See the inside, yeah.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. Of course. I am not so anti-PDA. I think it's fine.
You should only wear long sleeves, long pants.
As long as it's PDA and not PDS. I don't need to see anyone making babies.
Took me a second.
Yeah. Except you, Huel. I wanna see you put a baby in a lady's tummy. But that's
it.
So.
Okay. Maybe you can write an email next week.
We'll see. Wait, then it wouldn't be anonymous. I know Todd would protect my anonymity, but still. Todd, was
any
that...
Any other thoughts on the...
Yeah, did we have any other...
questions?
Any other asks?
That was a long enough ask for today. We're running long, fellas. There's only so much help we can give out to the youth of the nation. They're so troubled. They have so much troubles going on. Pat's a teacher, so he knows this. They have all these kinds of questions. I'm sure he gets asked every day, stuff like this.
You know, I have to say, we spoke about my time in Japan earlier, and if that were written by one of my students over there, I would have been very proud. I'm just saying.
Yes, you taught English to Japanese people.
I did.
Yes.
Very coherent. Yep. I could follow it.
Yep. Very judgy of foreigners, which seems to be very in keeping with my experience with the mountain folk in Japan.
Now, it's weird that we had you on this week for a game that was developed in England, and yet we've done so many Japanese games, and poor Todd has had to pronounce the titles.
Oh, it's true. Oh,
poor
it's...
me. I mean, I know how to pronounce them.
I'm an expert.
He does seem like a native speaker, yes.
You definitely use an accent, yes.
Slight. It's very slight.
Yes, yes. Anyways, on all of these culturally sensitive notes, I think we better sign off for tonight. Todd, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we left?
Yeah, once again, the trousers of evil are yanked down by the mocking hands of justice.
Huel, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Making cookies with butter-flavored shortening rather than butter or margarine keeps them from flattening out too much during baking.
Is that from this game, or...?
It is one of the tips in the back of the manual.
Well, yeah, that is kind of just a good tip for life. That's nice of them.
It is a hint and tip.
Yeah, true. It didn't say that it was going to be specific to the game, so...
Of course.
All right, Pat, thanks so much for being a guest on tonight's show. Anything else you wanted to say before we signed off here?
No, just that just like Earthworm Jim, it's time for me to ride that rocket on up out of here.
Oh, that's good sentiments for life, too.
It sure is.
On that note, here's a snifferoo from next week's game, and we are playing as yet another platforming game from the 1990s. Here you go. I didn't know how to end that.
Playing as,
and it's going to be a game. And here
we
it's
are
coming right now, and it's
playing
it
for
next week. And it's a platformer.
Games. Video games,
and scene.
Fear not, plumber boy. The bandicoot will come. I'm coming to get you now.
Hi, how are you?
Am I on the right street?
Can you tell me where Nintendo is?
People run a lot here. This is really nice. Plumber boy, your time has come.
Stop looking at me. A
hell's wrong with these people? Never see a bandicoot before?
Hey, plumber boy, mustache man, your worst nightmare has arrived.
Pack up your stuff. I got a little surprise for you here.
Check it out. What do you think about that? We got real time, 3D, lush organic environments. How's that make you feel, buddy?
Feel a little like your days are numbered?
I'm gonna have to ask you to leave.
You're hurting my elbow.
Is that Italian?
No, bandicoot. It's an Australian name.
Feldman, Joseph J.
Feldman, Joseph J. According to my research, you're in the market for a new game system. Are you aware, Mr. Feldman, that Sony's PlayStation has more than 150 games? NHL Face Off 97, Jet Moto, Tobal No. 1, Destruction Derby 2, Crash Bandicoot.
I could go on.
I'm going to give you a personal demonstration.
Get off my lawn, you freak.
Coming up.
Joseph J.